Part 3, Canto 6, Chapter 10, Shloka 9 continued. So here it's explained, somebody had seen personally with their eyes how the animals are starved for at least 3-4 days and then forced in a small truck and taken to the slaughterhouse, and they're alive till the very end, while they were still slaughtered, chopped up. So here they give so much pain to the animals, and then they say, we follow this religion and we follow that religion, and they say that the animals have no soul, and they talk like this, and they think they're very religious. This is not dharma. Here, the Diti Muni is explaining what dharma is. To feel pain for the pain of other living entities, and to feel joy for the happiness of other living entities. This is avyaya dharma. Avyaya dharma is one that gives us happiness of being in the Lord's dham. That is avyaya dharma. And if these people are thinking that they have a good life after death and they are going to heaven, then who is hell made for? Those who are murderers of the animals, who do not feel the agony and pain of the animals, how they can be elevated to heavenly planets? Here, Dadichi Muni is giving an Amar Sandesh, means an instruction which will make you live forever. He is saying, this is Sanatana Dharma, is to be happy in other living entities' happiness and to feel pain in their pain. And all living entities, not just humans. And all these so-called dharmas, they're not avyaya dharma, they're vyaya dharmas. Everyone has the right to live in the Lord's creation. Everyone has the right to live in sukh. Everybody has the right to live in happiness. If humans think that only they have the right to live and they can freely slaughter the animals in this cruel way, or just even to slaughter the animals in this way, this is wrong. In the Lord's vision, this is sin, and he will be given heavy punishment. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described when you slaughter an animal, what kind of punishment you get after death. Sukadev Goswami has described in great detail all the different hellish planets. So this is dharma, to try to understand the dukkha and the sukha of the living entities, the happiness and distress of the other living entities. And after this, the Diti Muni is expressing his sorrow, how the humans waste their very temporary human form of life. A man with his wife, children and wealth, why he does not do good for others with all these facilities? Text number 10, Canto 6, Chapter 10, Text 10.
कुर्याद अस्वार्थैर मर्त्य स्वाध्याति विग्रहे अहो दैन्य वो कितनी दीनता है.
Here Dadichi Muni is saying, अहो दैन्यम, अहो कष्टम, alas, what a miserable condition, and what a simply tribulation that this Shan Bhangur means, Shan means a moment, and Bhangur means which can be destroyed. This body which can be destroyed at any moment, which after death is eaten by dogs and jackals, was not used with his wealth and friends and relatives for the good of others. He is saying Sva, Gyati and Vigra. Sva means his wealth. Gyati means relatives and friends like wife and children. Vigra means with his own body. Every human being has this set. Everyone has some wealth and some relatives and friends and his own body. All these things can work for us. And what is the common denominator in all these three things? Wealth, relatives and own body. There is parakya and shanbhangu. Dadichi Muni says that it's parakya means it belongs to other people. And shanbhangu means, shan means a moment and bhangu means can be destroyed. So it is destined to be destroyed at any moment. One day we are separated by our children and even our wife, if not at the time of death. So while they are still with us and in good health, they should be engaged for the benefit of others. In the Bhagavatam it is said, they should be engaged in others' welfare. In the Bhagavatam it is said, that a man should not think that the wife is only there to serve him. That wife is there only to serve him. Husbands often think that my wife is my dasi and Lord has made her to serve me. That's all he thinks. But the Bhagavatam says that the wife should be used to engage in others' welfare as much as possible. How should the wife be used? That she can cook and she can serve, cook prasad and feed others. Of course, it is different in the West because the wife may be going to do her job to work. And so we cannot expect her that she should come home and cook for distributing to other people. But the instruction of the scriptures, as we see still in India in the Vedic culture, if a sadhu arrives at somebody's house, or maybe a poor person arrives in somebody's house, so often the wife would cook and serve this person. And sometimes she would just give the uncooked grains and dal, etc., for them to cook themselves. And there, to do this, the women take great pleasure. So it's the husband's duty to engage his wife and children in serving others. Just like we saw when there was this very severe earthquake in Bombay. So many families, they went day and night, they were cooking and feeding the homeless people who were who were suddenly hit by this earthquake. We were also there, and I saw that the whole family was there, and everybody was serving. And of course, that was an emergency situation. All of a sudden, this happened. But generally, living entities everywhere are suffering. So these children, wife, and our wealth, even this wealth today you may have, tomorrow it may go away. How long it will stay? As long as you have wealth, we should use it to help others. And also our own body. This body itself may not always be fit to serve others. There will come a time when this body, what to speak of serving others, will not even be able to take care of oneself. To take him to toilet, we'll need two people to take him. So as long as there is some, we have some power, some strength in our body, we should use this body to do some benefit for others. One day the power of this body disappears and the children and wife also are separated. Children, these days, as long as they're little, you can ask them to do something. But as soon as they turn 15, 16, they generally become out of control. And then he won't listen, maybe. So that's why in Mahabharata, it is said that up till age of 5, they should be lalan, means they should be loved very much. And between the ages of 5 and 10, they can be a little bit chastised. Chastise a little bit and keep them straight. Actually, it is said that you can even slap them a little bit on the back if it's really necessary. But of course, in this country, you're not allowed to do that. But it says in Mahabharata, when the child becomes 15 or 16, then one should not treat him like his son. One should treat him like his friend. You cannot talk to him even harshly. What to speak of slapping him? You try to slap him, he'll throw you on the ground. As he's entering his youth, they have a lot of strength. So, what I mean to say that as long as the children are under control, wife is submissive, and body is working, and there is some wealth, at that moment we should definitely use all these things for the benefit of others. Otherwise, this body may perish any moment. And also, it's also said this body is sharbhangu, means it's perishable any moment, and also it's parakya. Parakya means it belongs to others, and ultimately it belongs to jackals and dogs. Our bodies and the bodies of our relatives and our wealth is actually meant for others. That's why it's called parakya in this shloka. Who does this body belong to? To dogs and jackals. This is their property, this body. Or otherwise, the Agni, fire. This body belongs to who? It said. It has been thought about in this shloka. It is a common property. Someone's body, no one can say it's my body. Narad Muni says that if somebody is feeding you, feeding a person grains, bringing them up, and then he can say, because I've been feeding him and the body has been growing, so this body belongs to me. Because I have been feeding him, and then he believes that too. I brought him up. So the father and mother give birth to the child, so they say, it is our child, this body belongs to us, at least for some time. And the child, also he writes down when he fills in the form. He has to write father's name. So he has to write his father and mother's name. So the father thinks, this is mine. Mother says, he has lived in my womb, so he is mine. And a few years later, as soon as he is married, the wife comes and she says, he is mine. Isn't it? She straight says, he is mine, not yours. And even in the world, they say, when they get married, she takes her hand in marriage. So he says, she is mine. And she says, he is mine. This, he and she saying mine, it creates a lot of shackles tied down. At that time, it is seen the relationship with the father becomes weakened and weakened. What it was before he was married, it was not known which girl will claim him to be hers. So until then, mother and father kept calling him, he's mine. And then if he goes to get a job, or if he's in the army or the navy, they claim that he is ours. They say, he's our staff, don't they? He's ours. So, in this way, from birth onwards, so many people, one by one, they claim this body to be theirs. And if somebody forces him to work, or if they buy him, they say he's mine. They may even buy him, pay for him for a few hours to work. So for those few hours, they've bought him. For those few hours that he works for them, they're paying him by the hour. So those few hours, he belongs to them. So he says, I've paid him. So for that many hours, this body is mine. And the army, if they join the army, they say he is ours. He'll have to fight for the government. Wherever they send him, he has to go. But in the end, whose property does it become? If he's a Hindu, probably fire. Otherwise, perhaps dogs and jackals, or if it's buried, then the bugs inside the ground. They claim the body to be their property. So in the end, whatever thing, after it's been around and round, in the end, whoever enjoys that thing is called his. So after going around and round the whole cycle of life, in the end, that body belongs to either fire or animals that eat the dead body. This is the rule. So a thing might be packaged very nicely and transported with the truck from here to there to retail store, but the person who purchases it, that thing will ultimately belong to him. So in the end, who will this body belong to? When the body dies, who enjoys it? If this body dies and is thrown on the ground on the street, the very quickly dogs will come, and dogs and eagles. He says, oh, this body has had many names. He's had the name of professor, engineer, but now he is food for us. Or if the relatives burn the body, or the bugs inside under the ground will eat the body. This is called parakya. Para means others. Parakya means others' property. It would not come in use for the soul. This body was there to give distress to the soul. The soul cannot say this body is mine. This body was there to put the soul into degraded places, into lower form of life. It's the same thing, but so many people have said, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. In the end, it belongs to the dogs or the fire. So sometimes, sometimes the dog must be thinking, oh, very nice, this has been packaged as a professor, as a millionaire, but for the dog, this all these labels are packages, are packing, just like we buy food packaged. So for the dog, all these titles were just packages. The food was his. Just see if it was, even if it was a body of a president or a very big brahmana, if the body was thrown on the street, the dogs will come, they will not hesitate even for a moment to eat that body. That they don't think, oh, I shouldn't touch, it's a big person. They will eat. They don't need a permission, or they don't need to fill in any forms. They know, straight, they know it's theirs. Therefore, this body, the relatives, and even wealth is also parakya, belongs to others. The wealth that we are earning. Today, we were talking to somebody, and we were talking that in America, whether you're very wealthy or not so wealthy, everyone is eating the same.
सामान्य भोजन कर रहे हैं, ठीक है, और कितना धनी और ड्राइविंग कर रहे हैं,
एंड इवन हाउ वेल्थी ही इज, ही स्टिल हैज टू ड्राइव हिज ओन कार. सो दिस वेल्थ बिलोंग्स टू अदर्स, ही कैन नॉट एंजॉय हिज वेल्थ. अदर्स टेक, अदर्स मीन मे बी हिज सन विल टेक और हिज फ्रेंड्स विल टेक अवे और द गवर्नमेंट विल टेक अवे और डैकोर्स एंड थीव्स विल टेक इट अवे. दिस इज पारक्य. देयरफॉर इफ यू हैव वेल्थ वी शुड क्विकली यूज इट इन 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 द सर्विस ऑफ अदर्स. It's called inheritance. Even if you die and you have the wealth, it will, the government will automatically put it in your son's name. So many people, they die and they leave so much wealth in their bank. Big, big amount of wealth. Today, Radha Jeevan Prabhu was telling me that there was one lady, one Mataji, a lady in America, she died. She had three cats. So for the three cats, she left one mansion for each cat and at least $1 million for each cat. So the cats are not going to go and spend it, but people who take care of those cats, they will spend. So for cats, they're leaving so much money behind. $1 million and a mansion. So the wealth is parakya. It went, her wealth went to somebody else's hand. So this wealth and relatives and its own body belongs to others, and it should be used in the for the benefit of others. After saying this, verse 11. So, Sri Badarayan Uvacha, this is Sukadev Goswami, is Badarayan. He is the son of Badarayan, he's the son of Vyasadeva. He's saying that after saying this, Dadichi Muni, the son of Atharva, does resolve to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and in this way gave up his gross material body. This means that he was meditating that he is not this body, he is a servant of Krishna. By meditating on Krishna, he reached Krishna's pastimes. It is said, Sannayam. Sannayam means offering. Prabhupada has given a very long, important purport here that Jiva does not enter into the Lord, he enters into the pastimes of the Lord. He, the devotee, he goes to be with the Lord.
सम्मान का जो सम्यक ले गए उन्होंने चिंतन किया कि मैं भगवान का पार्षद हूँ, भगवान का दास.
He meditated.
भगवान की लीला में अपने मन को रखे, उनके सेवा में.
He meditated and then I am the parshad, I am a the Lord's parshad and meditated on the Lord, on his leela, and meditating in this way he left his body. How did he leave his body? Sukadev Goswami says, verse 12. First, he controlled his senses, his life force, his mind, his intelligence. He stopped seeing with his eyes, hearing with his ears, smelling with his nose, and he concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. And in this way, he cut his material bonds. And he could not even tell when his material body became separated from his self. In the Bhagavatam, it is said that a devotee should not be afraid of death. This is the way a devotee leaves his body. Just as sometimes when you see a person who's totally drunk, and sometimes when he's drunk in this way, he does not even know when his clothes fall off. So, in the same way, and also sometimes he walks around naked, he doesn't even know that his clothes is naked. So one who is so engrossed in bhakti to the Lord, when he leaves his body, he does not even realize when his material body is separated from his self. And when that is when he leaves his body and enters into Krishna's pastimes, he does not even realize, just like a drunken man, he doesn't realize when his clothes fall off. The Rishi Muni did not even know when he left his body. So he went to Vaikuntha, became one of the Lord's associates. And then all the demigods, they took his body. One Kamadhenu cow came, which took away, which licked his skin, and his body became free from the skin. And then the demigods took his bones out of his body, and they took it on an airplane to Indra's heavenly abode. What a great fortunate soul that Rishi Muni was, that his bones of his material body was taken by an airplane to the heavenly planets. Here, anybody's bones would have been taken to the burning ghat to burn his body, but the Rishi Muni's bones were taken to the higher planets. His material bones. And Vishwakarma, he's the architect, builder of the demigods. He used the bones to make the vajra. He made the Indra's weapon called the vajras, and with the leftover bones, he made other smaller weapons like some bows and some other arrows, but mainly the vajra. In this way, the Rishi Muni left his body. Srila Prabhupada writes in great detail on this point. This is the way to leave our material body, to engage our mind and senses totally in the pastimes of the Lord. So we don't, at the time of death, see or hear or think anything except the Lord. This katha, Parikshit Maharaj, who was hearing from Sukadev Goswami, how enthusiastic Maharaj Parikshit must have felt hearing this story of the Rishi Muni leaving his body, because he himself, in 3 or 4 days, was about to leave his body. So, hearing all these, Maharaj Parikshit became very enthusiastic, and it is very easy to understand that this body is so different from the soul. And to give it up, one should not hesitate. Just as to change the clothes, our clothes, there is no difficulty. But actually, humans, we take pleasure in changing our clothes. If somebody says, give me those old clothes, you wear these nice new ones, immediately we will give. But this body doesn't matter how old or rotten or diseased it gets. The living entity does not want to give up this body for a new one. We want to make paint it, do this surgery, that surgery, chant this mantra and that mantra to make it all right and make it young again, so they can live forever. But this body is parakya and sharbhangur. But the Diti Muni, he left his body in this way, went to the Lord's abode, and his bones were used to make this invincible weapon of Lord Indra. And all this happened under the direction of the Supreme Lord. So, Bhagavan Indra, who was so afraid of Vritasura, now he became very bold and he carried this vajra on his shoulder and he went ahead to fight with Vritasura. From here we will begin again tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Text number 13.
Bhagavate jasanvitaha Vrito devgana isarvaihe Gajendro pariyaso.
Text 14.
Stuyamano munigaihe Trailokyam harsayam niva.
So, King Indra took up this thunderbolt, the weapon called Vajra, it's thunderbolt, which was made by Vishwakarma from the bones of the Dadiji. Of all the weapons of the world, this Vajra or thunderbolt is the main one. Sudarshan Chakra is Sakshad, is itself the Lord's Swarup. That is not a weapon of this material world. No weapon of this world can even be compared with Lord Vishnu's Chakra. That is so totally transcendental. But in this material world, this Indra's Vajra is considered to be the greatest. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ayodha Nam Mam Vajra. Of all the weapons, I am Vajra. So this weapon was made by the bones of the Dadiji. And manufactured by Vishwakarma, who is considered the greatest architect of this material world. From the viewpoint of the maker, this vajra was made by the maker from the heavenly planets. There are many weapons made in this our planet, which is made by humans, but this was considered very exalted weapon. And from the other point of view, because it was made from the Dadichi Muni's bones, it had inconceivable power inside this weapon. Third thing was that it was made by the Lord's power of the Lord Himself. For this reason, Devraj Indra was very much enthusiastic. The same King Indra who was crying before due to the fear of Vritrasur, and he went with other demigods in the shelter of Lord Vishnu. That same King Indra was now very enthusiastic and brave. Hundred times more, he became enthusiastic. He had this vajra in his hand, and with all the demigods following him, he was seated on his elephant called Airavat. It is said in this verse 14, Devgane Sarve Gajendra Uparya Shobhata, that he was King Indra was sitting on top of Gajendra, means a very great elephant, and he was looking, his shobha, his beauty was very great. He shone, he was shining. The Lord has said in the Bhagavad Gita that of all the elephants, I am Airavat. At this Airavat, he was born out of the churning of the ocean. When there was the distribution between the demons and the demigods, the wealth that came out of the ocean, at that time, it was Indra's turn first. Whatever was coming out of the ocean, whatever came out of the ocean, the demons had decided that whatever comes out, we will just take it by force. So, but the Lord was there, so in between, He used to make them compromise. At the very beginning, poison came, and nobody wanted that. Everybody, the demons and the demigods both, left everything and ran away. And they took shelter of Lord Shiva. So the poison all went in the share for Lord Shiva. One poet has said, that when the poison came out of the churning of the ocean, this very great poison that came out, then all the demons and demigods, they ran to take shelter of Lord Shiva, and they prayed to him, please, you take this poison. So this Lord Shiva, he took all of the poison into his palms of his two hands and he took it. So when the poison came, the devotees, the demigods, they went to Lord Shiva and requested him, please, you take the poison. But when the nectar finally came, they did not even invite Lord Shiva. This is the way of this world. We are very, very selfish. At least they should have remembered him, that this Lord Shiva had saved us all at one time. Let us at least invite him. They should have offered him this bhoga nectar and then taken, but no. They did not even think of him. And still, Lord Shiva till this day has never complained that I drank that poison and they did not even invite me. What need does he have for anything? So, first the poison came. Which things came and what order? In the Bhagavatam it is said. Whatever came, the demons would say, we'll take. This is the nature of the demons. First of all, that horse came. Bali Maharaj said. He said, I will have this horse. At that time, he was the leader of the demons. Although he was a devotee of the Lord, but the point of view from his race or his body, he was against fighting with the demigods. So the Lord indicated to Lord Indra, let him take, because after this, it will be your turn and something very nice will come. So when the elephant came out, the demons again said, no, we will have this also. Then the Lord said, after all, the demigods also helped in the churning. They should get something too. Let Indra have this elephant. So this Airavat elephant was given to Lord Indra. He's the greatest elephant in beauty and in strength. And that's why he's called Gajendra, the lord of all the gajas, the elephants. So Indra, seated on that Gajendra, looked very beautiful. And with great enthusiasm, he went to kill Vritrasura. And on the other side, Vritrasura, he himself was so powerful, but with him, all the demons came along. Later on, we'll hear all the names of his demoniac army. So Indra had all the demigods with him. And they were singing the glories of Indra. They were glorifying him. That you're maintaining this world, and with your bhakti, you have even pleased Lord Vishnu, from which you've got this beautiful vajra weapon, which is invincible. They were all singing his glories in this way. Definitely you were going to win this battle. And they were singing his glories. And with Indra was walking with fearlessly, although up till now all the weapons that Indra had thrown at Vritrasura had simply swallowed all of them. it is said in this shloka 14, Trilokyam Harsya Niva. It seemed as if all the three worlds, as if he was, the word Iva means as if he was causing pleasure to all the three worlds, the way he was riding on this Gajendra with his Vajra. Although he had not yet caused pleasure to all the three worlds, because Vitasura had not died yet, but they had all already assumed that now Vitasura is practically dead. So they were, the whole world, all the three worlds were already in pleasure. As if they were already in pleasure, they were feeling like this. The people of the whole world were really tortured by Vitasura. He would just catch anybody and just devour him, eat him up. So Devaraj Indra ran with great speed towards Vitasura. Text 15. My dear Maharaj Parikshit, Vritasura was surrounded by the leaders of the demoniac armies. Each one was a very, very powerful leader. And they were, each one of them with their whole armies. And Vritasura was in the middle of them. But Indra did not at all become scared. Previously, all the demigods headed by Indra ran away in fear with just Vritasura alone. And today Vritasura is surrounded by the leaders, each one with their demoniac armies. But here Indra seems very enthusiastic and brave, and he's running towards Vritasura. The demigods headed with Indra were not at all afraid this time to face Vitasura. This is the Lord's mercy. Badly defeated persons previously, today they are very bold in front of the same person, Vitasura. This is the mercy of the Lord Vishnu. Here, Sukadev Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj in text 15, Krudho Rudra Ivantakam. It seemed, the way Indra was running towards Vitasura, it seemed as if Rudra, Lord Shiva, being very angry at Antaka, who's Yamaraj, it seemed as if Rudra was running very fast towards Yamaraj to kill him. What happened one time, this is the example here Sukadev Goswami is giving, that one time Lord Shiva ran to kill Yamaraj. There is a story that there was a child called Markandeya. And Narad Muni, this was a long time ago, Narad Muni had seen the hand of this child and told the parents that this child will die at the age of 20. So his father, Markandeya's father, became very worried. And he told Narad Muni, please, there must be some solution that my child does not have to die at the age of 20. So that his child does not die untimely. Narad Muni said, that he should chant this Mahamrityunjay mantra. He should chant japa. So his father is a strota, is a prayer to Lord Shiva. So Markandeya's father taught the boy this Mahamrityunjay shloka, and he told him to chant this mantra in Lord Shiva's temple. So especially when his 20th birthday came, since that time, every day he used to go in front of Lord Shiva and chant this mantra his father had taught him with great attention and love. So that the time, the moment of his death came, and the Yamaraj himself rode on the his carrier, the bull, and came to get this boy Markandeya. So, as soon as Markandeya saw Yamaraj coming towards him, he very strongly embraced Shivlinga that he was praying, worshipping, and he said, Trahimam, Trahimam, please save me, save me, save me, Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva appeared. And as he appeared, he took his trishul, his trident, and he ran towards Yamaraj with great speed. So instead of taking Markandeya, he ran so fast because he cannot escape the trident of Lord Shiva. He just ran away. And Lord Shiva kept running after Yamaraj for a long time with great speed. So here, in this verse, number 15, Sukadev Goswami is giving that same example, that it seemed the way Indra was running after Vritrasura, it seemed as if Rudra or Lord Shiva, being very angry at Yamaraj, had formerly run towards to kill him. So the Lord previously had told Indra from his own lotus mouth that you make this have this weapon made, and Vritrasura will die from this weapon. So Lord Indra had complete faith in Lord Vishnu's words. So he was totally fearless, and he was running towards Vritrasura in this way. So Srila Sukadev Goswami, thought this example was very appropriate at this time. Verse number 16. At that time, that battle took place between the demigods and the demons at the bank of the river Narmada. And this happened at the end of Satya Yuga and the beginning of Treta Yuga. In this world, there have been many, many battles, very great battles. So in all the Shastras, this battle between Vritrasura and Indra is considered to be one of the greatest battles. Just like within the humans, there was this battle of Kurukshetra about 5,000 years ago. No other battle of that sort has yet taken place within human beings, like the one at Mahabharata. And another time, there was, it's called Devasur Sangram. this happened after the churning of the ocean between the demons and the demigods, and after the nectar was taken by the demigods, there was a great battle between the demons and the demigods. That was considered to be one of the greatest battles. And this battle of Vritasura and Indra is also recorded as one of the greatest battles. And on one side there was Indra and all the demigods, and on the other side there was Vritasura and all the demons with their armies. Sukadev Goswami says, Param Daruna Rana means Param Daruna means Param fearful. Rana means a great battle. This was a very, very fearful battle. And when did it happen? In Shambhu Manuvantar's first Chaturyug, at the end of Satyug, and Treta was beginning. At that time this happened, on the bank of Narmada. Here it says, on the bank of Narmada. This Narmada river here is not the Narmada river that's in India between Madhya Pradesh going on to Gujarat. This Narmada river is in the heavenly planets. That is where this battle took place. So Swayambhuva Manavantar's first Chatur Yuga, because it is said here at the end of Satya Yuga, beginning of Treta Yuga. So which Treta Yuga? There's four cycles, they keep coming one after another. So this is explained here. From the side of the demigods, who all are there? Sukadev Goswami is telling all the names. Text 17 and 18. Rudra. 11 Rudras came to fight for Indra. Their 11 Rudras are themselves Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva has expanded himself into 11 forms. They call Ekadash Rudra. They work at the time of Pralaya, annihilation. So they all came. Vasubhi. And the eight Vasus, they all came. Aditya. Mata Aditis, all her sons are called Adityas. They all came to help Indra. Indra is their eldest brother. And their sons and grandsons. Ashvibhyam. And also the two Ashwini Kumaras, Pitris, all the Pitas, Devtas, Vashnibhi, all the Vashnis, Marudbhi, all the Maruds, Rubhi, all the Ribus, they were born from Bhiguji. Here, each one is named, but each one had millions and millions of followers and family persons. Very great army. So Vritrasura saw Indra with all these people. Vritrasura, he was not on any kind of carrier. Indra had his elephant, but Vritrasura was not on anything. He could not have he could not fit his body on either any kind of chariot or any kind of elephant. He had such a huge, gigantic body that he could not possibly have had a carrier. His body itself was as big as a Himalaya mountain. He would stand and fight. When he would take the trident in his hand and stand up to fight, he would look as if it was a mountain made of the kajal. Kajal, the black ointment we put on eyes. So he looked as if he was a great mountain made of kajal. Huge body. Who could make a chariot so big for him to stand on? Suppose if somebody wanted to put a whole Himalaya mountain on a chariot, how it can be done? It cannot be. As soon as he puts his foot on an elephant, even if he puts his toe on an elephant, a Ravat, he will squash to death. So for him, for Vritrasura, there was no carrier, but Indra was seated on his Aravat elephant. Vritrasura was on foot. But he walked very fast. He has such a big body that in one step he would cover many, many miles. So Vritrasura saw Indra, that with great speed Indra is coming towards him. So Vritrasura saw that Indra was coming with his thunderbolt Vajra, and he was coming with Rudras, Vasus, Adityas, Ashwini Kumar, Pitas, Vashnis, Maruts, Sadhyas, Vishwadevas, and each one of these people had their army of family and soldiers. So Vritrasura noticed that Indra was shining so brightly with his effulgence that previously he did not have, and he had run away seeing him.